Good morning. The first case this morning is case number 2016-1423, Spirit Master Funding 9 LLC versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. Mr. Sleggs.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Todd Sleggs and I represent the appellant Spirit Master Funding 9 LLC. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Just watch your time.
Thank you. This is a 2014 tax year appeal from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals involving a 7,534 square foot single tenant restaurant building that was constructed in 1997. The Cuyahoga County auditor initially assessed the property at a value of $2,016,400, and then the property sold in August of 2014 for $2,925,980, and then it subsequently sold again to my client in December of 2014 for $3,439,029. The case was heard by the local Board of Revision, and the initial request by the Board of Education in their complaint was that the property be assessed at the second sale price. The testimony by the appraiser that was hired by my client was that that was a sale leaseback transaction. And the local board found that the earlier sale, the August 2014 sale, was closest to the tax lien date of January 1 of 2014 and the best indication of value as of the tax lien date. And we discussed at the Board of Revision the HIN case. That case was also discussed in the briefs before the Board of Tax Appeals, and they've also been discussed in the briefs before this court. When the Board of Tax Appeals heard the case, they reached essentially the same conclusion that the Board of Revision did. And they did not consider the Rasick appraisal report that we had submitted at the Board of Revision. We had Mr. Rasick appraise the property on an unencumbered fee simple basis based upon the amendment to 5713.03 that had been enacted in March of 2013. And one of the reasons why we did that, again, my client was the purchaser in the second transaction, was we knew that the property was the subject of a lease when we bought it. And so based upon the statute, we felt that we needed to have an independent fee appraiser take a look at the lease terms and advise us whether the sale reflected the value standard required under the statute.
I have a couple questions about that first sale. First of all, does your client contest the arm's length nature of that sale?
No.
And the follow-up question is, and it doesn't look like there's a whole lot of evidence in the record about this, but was the lease in place at the time of that sale?
No.
It was not?
No. And Mr. Rasick testified to this, and I believe it's also mentioned in his discussion of the sale transactions. It's page 112 in the supplement. But the first sale, which was a transfer from N&D restaurants to Red Lobster Hospitality LLC, they were the grantor to my client. But that sale was, and again, I'm relying on Mr. Rasick's investigation of that transaction. It was a portfolio sale of over 500 Red Lobsters to a company that he identified as Golden Gate Capital. And they created Red Lobster Hospitality LLC in order to purchase these 500 operating Red Lobster restaurants. And it was Mr. Rasick's conclusion that that was not a fee simple sale. And that was his finding with respect to the sale to us as well. I'm not going to dwell on that too much since neither the BTA nor the Board of Revision utilized the sale to us. They were relying on the earlier sale. And Mr. Rasek did testify that he spoke with Red Lobster, who was essentially the grantor in the August 2014 sale. And he was relying on his discussions with them about that transaction in terms of reaching his conclusions on whether he could use that sale to determine the unencumbered fee simple value of the real estate. He did look at the lease, even though as of January 1 of 2014, the property was still owner-occupied. The lease was entered into in December of 2014, and he did look at that to see if he could use that for purposes of determining market rent and his appraisal. And it was his conclusion that market rent was significantly less than the rent that was reflected in the sale leaseback transaction to my client. And he also opined that the market occupancy was 95% as opposed to the 100% occupancy when the property was sold under a 20-year lease to my client.
And you may have addressed this, but explain to me how the lease that wasn't entered into until December, how did that affect the August sale?
The only thing that I can glean from the record in the case is that Golden Gate, when they acquired the Red Lobster enterprise, entered into the sale leaseback transactions in order to finance the transaction.
Is there any evidence in the record of a sale leaseback transaction?
No, the only evidence of the sale leaseback transaction would be the conveyance fee statement and deed in the record evidencing the transfer from Red Lobster Hospitality LLC to my client.
And what in the conveyance fee statement in particular demonstrates the sale leaseback?
Nothing other than the fact that Mr. Rasek investigated the sale, and when he had the lease, he testified that the lease was entered into December 23rd of 2014. That was the start date of the lease to Red Lobster. And on that point, the Board of Tax Appeals essentially criticized my client in terms of the presentation in this case, that we didn't have anybody testify who was connected to that August 14 sale. But as I mentioned, that was one, you know, sale removed from my client. My client was the grantee from the buyer in that transaction. And so we relied on Evidence Rule 703 in terms of allowing Mr. Rasek, who we'd retained to advise us in the case, to investigate the sale. And we believe that what he did in this case in terms of investigating the transfer history on the property is consistent with what appraisers do as part of conducting appraisals, as they investigate sale transactions. And in this particular case, you know, he was investigating a transaction that we were not a party to. And so, you know, we had no way to provide a witness on our own. I will say, and this is in his testimony in the record, is that Red Lobster did provide a representative to Mr. Rasek to explain the transaction, and he did have the sale documentation. And then the only other thing that I would point out is that what we had was the lease, and we did provide that to the Board of Education during the course of discovery in the case. So they did have the
But the lease is not in our record, correct?
Yeah, and the reason why the lease is not in the record is Red Lobster would not waive a confidentiality provision. They didn't want their lease terms made public so that other lessors would know what they're paying in rent for this location. And that's very common amongst these national retailers that have lots of locations. They kind of want to protect what their lease terms are so that you can't have another landlord using that against them. So, you know, evidence rule 703, because of the fact that we were not a party to the earlier sale and the fact that our lessee would not allow us to make the lease a matter of public record, is a pretty important consideration in this case in terms of the evidence, because the Board of Tax Appeals was very critical of my client for not providing a witness to a sale that we were not a party to, and then also the fact that we were not able to put the lease in the record. But I do feel that what Mr. Rasek did in this case is consistent with generally accepted appraisal practice. And so we feel that even though the Board of Tax Appeals felt that it was hearsay, I think Evidence Rule 703 provides an exception to that. So I think it's a very important part of the way that we had to present the case, since we weren't a party to the sale that's being used against us. I mean, it's kind of an interesting situation because we didn't own the property as of January 1 of 14, and we didn't enter into the lease until, or we didn't buy the property subject to the lease till December of 14. So we're kind of responsible for 14, but we don't have a tenant to pay the taxes. So it's kind of an interesting fact pattern. We're asking that the court reverse and remand the case to the Board of Tax Appeals and to consider our appraisal evidence. I mean, the Board of Tax Appeals at this time, the Terraza 8 case that I had provided as a notice of additional authority had not been decided. And they did not reach a serious consideration of Mr. Rasek's appraisal. They did discuss the lease, but they really didn't get to the occupancy issue, which was the crux of his analysis, as well as the market rent. And so we're asking that the court remand the case to the Board of Tax Appeals with instructions to consider our appraisal evidence in determining the unencumbered fee simple value under 571303 as amended. And I also provided the Bronx case as my second notice of additional authority, because as these cases have gone back to the Board of Tax Appeals, there's been an issue that's been raised about whether the record should be reopened, and we don't believe that the record should be reopened in these cases. All the parties had an opportunity to submit evidence at the Board of Revision and at the Board of Tax Appeals, and so when these cases are remanded to the Board of Tax Appeals, we feel that they should make a determination based upon the evidence in the record. And unless the court has any other questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hinkle.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Kevin Hinkle on behalf of the Orange City School Board of Education. Our position is this is really a fact-based decision by the BTA. The property was sold in July/August of 2014. That was what was presented to the Board of Revision, and it was in the record at the BTA. There was a second sale, as indicated by Mr. Slags, in December of 14. At the Board of Revision, we conceded that the first sale should control the value if it was not rebutted. That was at the Board of Revision. We introduced both deeds and both conveyance fee statements. As stated in the Hilliard City Schools case, quote, when, for example, the proponent provides a deed and conveyance fee statement, the requirement is met and the presumption arises that a sale occurred. And then it goes upon the opposition to rebut that.
So what, I mean, they did attempt to rebut it with an appraisal. So what is your view of the appraisal at this point?
The appraisal, that if you don't rebut the appraisal, you can't, that the appraisal itself doesn't rebut the presumption. With that, I would look to the quote, the Winchester, New Winchester Gardens versus Franklin County Board of Revision. An appraiser asserted that a sale was not arm's length, quote, an appraiser asserted that a sale was not arm's length, but this assertion was not supported in the record by any sales document, and no parties to the sale testified. Applying the Almond Tree case, the Court of Appeals held the appraiser's testimony was inadmissible hearsay. And the Almond Tree case, which is a 10th District Court of Appeals, as is the New Winchester, stated in 1988, quote, an appraiser's testimony that a sale was not arm's length constituted the, quote, rankest type of hearsay, quote. So the questions were asked regarding the lease. So the lease and the parties, the BTA has subpoena power. They could have subpoenaed parties to that sale. They could have subpoenaed the lease. They had the lease. It could have been introduced under that situation. It was chosen not to have any hearing at the BTA. It was waived. So the record was closed with what happened at the Board of Revision. So that test, there was no testimony other than the statement by Rasich. And as to what Rasich stated with respect to the lease and the idea of keeping confidential the important terms of a lease, in his report, which is public record as part of the BTA file, is it was sold in a leaseback, sale leaseback transaction where a rental rate of $245,891 per year, $32.65 per square foot had been established. This rental rate had a commencement date of December 23, 2014 for a term of 20 years. That's all the information anybody wants if you're competing with them, and it's part of the public record. That cases that were cited, that were discussed by Mr. Sleggs, in each of Bronz and Teresa, in the Bronx case in Teresa, both as additional evidence. What is key in each of those is a lease was entered into prior to tax lien date in each of Teresa and Bronx. One, the existing lease predated the hearing, and both of those leases are part of the record. In this instance, what we have is we've got a lease 4 months later than the transaction, and we also don't have that lease of record. It's a total, and that's why we indicate to the court, we really think this is a factual review of a BTA's decision.
But did the BTA, I mean, if you, my understanding of Bronx Park and Terraza, it's saying that the that this non-sale price evidence is relevant, and the sale price evidence is not going to be conclusive any longer. Did the BTA actually weigh and consider that appraisal evidence?
In our case?
In this case?
No, it didn't. What it did, it had the conveyance fee, it had the deed, it took those two, and then it stated the only other evidence in front of it, the only other alleged evidence in front of it was one, statements of counsel, which it stated in was not evidence, and secondly, were the statements by counsel, statements by the appraiser without any firsthand knowledge. And so with that, the quality of that evidence never rebutted the presumption, so they never got to the appraisal.
But the BTA's comments regarding hearsay that Mr. Rasich, the way it characterized his report, weren't those comments confined to his statements regarding the sale, not so much the rest? There's a whole separate appraisal.
Yeah,
so he's doing a sales comparison analysis and all sorts of other things.
Right.
The hearsay criticisms don't really address those parts of the appraisal.
No, it's
correct?
Limited solely to attacking the sale. That's what they. I mean, they are, that the rest of the appraisal is, as is typical in any appraisal, will have hearsay where they've interviewed people and they've collected evidence. But in following the other cases, that as to the sale itself, what has been stated in the case law is the appraiser's testimony can't undo a sale or can't rebut the sale.
So your position is that this is just a fact-bound case, but you're also acknowledging that the BTA didn't really weigh the appraisal fully. Is that really a role for this court to do now?
Not at all.
So who's going to weigh the evidence then?
It doesn't have to be weighed. Is that if a sale is determined, it has to be rebutted before you go to the appraiser. What no case law has stated is that if there's a good sale, we have to consider the appraised value.
Is that consistent with the Terraza and the Bronx Park cases, what you've just said?
Well, I believe so, as to that in both of those cases, there was evidence presented of the lease, as well as the lease was predated the decision. I don't see how. What we have is a sale. That sale had to be rebutted. There's an appraisal that is based upon a lease the one discusses a lease, and it says, here's the value as of 14 if we ignore the original sale. And there's no reason to ignore the original sale when the lease, there was no lease in place. There's no encumbrance. What the law changed, and there's a lot of discussion in the brief in Mr. Schlegg's brief, as to we've got a leasehold interest we have to consider, whether it's positive or negative. There's no leasehold interest on the August 14th sale. There's no lease. And then we also, with the change in the law, have to look at, the auditor has to look at whether there's a leasehold interest or not, because it has to be as unencumbered. Well, that sale in August 14th was unencumbered. And so if what we're going to have is, I mean, I don't think the case law in Terraza or Bronx goes anywhere near that if there is a sale, that whether it's rebutted or not, we then go to appraisal testimony. Those cases don't go anywhere near that far, I don't believe. I mean, and that's what in this case you'd have to, we would be doing. We'd be saying that despite that there was no evidence supplied as to a sale, despite there was no lease in place, we are now going to take appraisal testimony which challenges the sale. And if that doesn't, then we now are back to the point where a sale is not a sale, and you can introduce appraisal evidence that says, hey, I don't care that it wasn't encumbered by a lease. I don't care that there was no lease in place. You said there was a sale. Our appraiser is now going to come up with a different number and say, because we have a different number, that sale's no good. I mean, the law is, I don't see anywhere near that. Any of the case law, and certainly the amendment to the statute, went nowhere near that kind of a decision. So we think it's a straightforward sale with no legal new legal issues. There was a sale, there's no lease in place, so the whole leasehold interest discussion doesn't apply. We also think that as unencumbered doesn't apply because it was unencumbered at that time, that we show that the case law shows that that's enough for a Board of Education to show at a sale. We show that at the Board of Revision. They held it. There was an opportunity at the Board of Revision for the owner to submit evidence. Contrary, what they submitted was solely the appraisal. At the BTA, we both waived hearing and the record was closed. Subpoena power could have been used. So what we have in front of the BTA was simply the deed, the conveyance fee statement, and from our side, and from the other, in the end, confirmed no existence of a lease. And from the other side, there was no evidence presented, other than an appraisal that in no way can be taken as rebuttal to an unrebutted presumption of a good sale.
So just so I understand your argument, what I'm hearing is that in order for an appraisal to be relevant, you're saying that it first must essentially attack the sale, and only once it successfully rebuts or attacks something about the sale, then at that point the appraisal is relevant evidence. Is that your argument?
Well, no, not exactly. And I appreciate if I can clarify that, is that the sale has to be attacked not just by the appraisal, that the rebuttal on the sale has to be by the evidence. And whether that evidence can just be an appraiser, in each of Bronx and Terraza, both deal with the fact that, and in the record, is the existence of that lease. And the Teresa case, they reference how it's a 75-year lease with the option to terminate after 25 years. So those leases in the record, I review both those cases, are being much more important than what the appraiser states. I mean, that as I indicated in the Hilliard case, which relied on Cummins, quote, an appraiser's opinion of value is not enough on its own to overcome the validity of a sales price. And so I don't think either of those cases, now Teresa or Bronx, state that the mere statements in an appraisal that say that we don't like the sale is enough. I mean, that Rasich's comments were, he didn't know anything about that sale other than what's concluded there, that there was a sale of a number of Red Lobster restaurants. There was no evidence that there was goodwill. There's no evidence there was personal property. All that's there is a conveyance fee statement signed under penalty of perjury that it was 2.9 in change for the real property. No allocation of personal property, no further note. That's sworn testimony as to the value of that real estate, and that's what was presented. I mean, if we stretch the law, which I don't think either Bronx or Teresa did, that a simple appraiser can say that and challenge the sale by saying, I don't think that sale was a good sale. What grounds is there to say that wasn't a good sale? There was no lease in place. He had a discussion that was part of a bigger portfolio. Those that were involved in the sale actually had knowledge, and they allocated to the conveyance fee statement under penalty of perjury. So I'm going to quote from Teresa. Quote, once the BOE provided the basic documentation of the sale, Teresa had the burden of going forward with rebuttal evidence showing that the sale price did not, in fact, reflect the property's true value. Unlike in Teresa, in this case, no lease existed. All we have is the conveyance fees under penalty of perjury, and those have a certain value presented. We ask that the court affirm the BTA's valuation of the property as of January 1, 2014.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Sleggs, you have 2 minutes and 20 seconds remaining.
Thank you. May it please the court, I disagree with the appellee's assertion that an appraisal cannot be used to rebut a sale. You know, the court recently decided the Buckeye Terminals LLC case, and I'm quoting from the court's decision, neither Columbus City Schools nor HAN precludes the use of appraisal testimony to demonstrate that an allocation of a bulk sale price is improper because it does not reflect the true value of the property. So I think that is better authority than the New Winchester Gardens case, which was actually my case. And, you know, I'm sure the court's very familiar with that case, but one of the reasons why that case came out the way it did is the Board of Tax Appeals didn't let any of my witnesses testify. I had three witnesses testify, and the BTA was reversed in terms of their exclusion of all three of those witnesses' testimony. So I didn't have a lot of a record to work with in New Winchester Gardens. I did on remand after the court decided the case. But I think Buckeye is the better case. The Cummins case that the appellee referenced, that was decided prior to 5713.03 as amended. So I don't feel that that case or the cases that were heard and decided prior to the amendment of 5713.03 apply. I think Terrazzo was the first case addressing the statute as amended, and then the Buckeye and State Farm followed after that. So I would ask the court to consider those cases in deciding this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted, and you will be advised of the court's decision.